Katra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Katra AI. Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we're opening up a book that honestly has subtly shifted how a lot of people think about music and culture. We are diving into Nicholas Cook's music, a very short introduction. Now, don't let that title fool you. The ideas packed inside are, well, pretty groundbreaking.
Yeah, they really are. And our goal today isn't really about learning music history or, you know, complex theory. It's more fundamental. We want to challenge the definitions you might be carrying around about what music is. Cook basically argues that the typical Western way we treat music, you know, as these static, untouchable masterpieces.
Right, like museum pieces.
Exactly. He argues that view is not just outdated, but it's actually quite restrictive. It boxes music in.
And thinking about this framework feels really essential right now, doesn't it? We're just swimming in music constantly. Billions of tracks streaming everywhere. So you kind of need a toolkit, right, to navigate all that volume and start questioning the hierarchies we just absorb. You know, why does this piece feel important and that track feel, I don't know, disposable?
Cook really gives you permission to be a more democratic listener, I suppose. His book is almost like a shortcut to understanding that those hierarchies, they're often cultural, historical. They're not necessarily inherent in the sounds. It helps you become a more critically engaged listener, less passive.
Okay, so let's unpack the person behind this intellectual hand grenade, as you put it. Who is Nicholas Cook?
Well, Cook is a hugely respected figure, very influential in British musicology. He's held professorships at top places like the University of Cambridge. So he's operating right from the heart of the academic establishment.
And that insider status feels key, right? He's not some outsider critic just, you know, lobbing stones. He's actually leading a significant shift from within that traditional structure. He's one of the key voices in what's called new musicology.
Right. And it's worth understanding what makes that new. Traditional musicology for a long time was really focused on formalism, which basically means analyzing the notes on the page, the structure, the harmony, treating the musical score almost like a sacred text, a scientific object.
Gotcha. Just the what.
Yeah, just the what. And new musicology came along and said, wait a minute, that misses, well, it misses almost everything that makes music important to people.
So it's a big methodological shift then. Instead of just the notes, they bring in tools from like sociology, cultural studies.
Critical theory, yeah, to look at the context. The why and the how of music. Cook is interested in what music does in the world, you know, how it functions, how it sells things, how it shapes national identity, how it defines social groups. He treats music as a kind of social action, a force.
Which brings us neatly to the, well, the really central argument of the book, the core thesis. What is it?
Okay, so after all his time studying the classical tradition, Cook basically says, we need to ditch this ingrained Western idea that music is just a collection of static, timeless objects, you know, these works created by geniuses. Instead, he argues that music is fundamentally a human activity. It only really exists in the moment it's being performed or heard or, you know, used for something.
Ah, so stop thinking of music as a noun. Start thinking of it as a verb. He talks about musicking, right?
Exactly. Musicking. It's not about the abstract thing called music. It's about the doing, the singing, the playing, the listening, even the dancing, all of that.
That feels like a really significant shift in perspective.
It is. That's the central paradigm shift. And the specific problem this idea targets is what he calls the museum culture around classical music. Think about that silent, almost reverent atmosphere in a concert hall, the intense focus on playing the score exactly right, the near worship of the composer figure.
Right. Don't cough. Don't clap in the wrong place.
Precisely. And Cook points out, look, that whole model, it isn't universal. It's not how music works everywhere or even how it always worked in Europe. It's an ideology that really grew out of 19th century European romanticism. And it tends to exclude musical traditions that rely heavily on, say, improvisation or community participation or just being passed down orally.
So his goal is actually quite democratic. He wants to empower us, the listeners, to see all kinds of music, you know, from a symphony to a pop song to an advertising jingle, as this kind of social action.
Yes, where meaning isn't just handed down from on high by some long-dead composer, but it's actively created and negotiated by everyone involved, performers, listeners, the whole context.
Okay, let's get into the specifics then. How does he build this case? He starts with musical value and commercialism, right? Using that Prudential insurance ad.
Yeah, that's such a brilliant kind of unexpected starting point. It immediately forces you to think outside the usual art music box. So this ad from the 90s used this very sophisticated, classically styled music. You know the type sounds restrained, intelligent, maybe a bit serious.
Sounds expensive.
Right. And Cook asked the killer question. Why would a financial company selling insurance choose that kind of music? Music that sounds traditional, controlled, secure.
Okay, I think I see it. Because the music itself isn't inherently secure, is it? But it carries all these cultural associations.
Exactly. The associations are key. That measured tempo, the string sounds, the familiar harmonic language. We collectively read those as implying quality, tradition, security, integrity.
So the music acts as a kind of stand-in for the values the company wants you to associate with their product.
Precisely. And this leads straight to his critical insight. Musical meaning is socially constructed. It's not just floating in the sound waves themselves. It's in our shared cultural understanding. And this is where he brings in the idea of musical gatekeepers. You know, academics, critics, award bodies, radio programmers.
The institutions.
Yeah, the institutions. They don't just passively judge music. They actively manage and market what gets considered valuable, what gets labeled art. We project meaning onto sounds based on these managed cues.
Wow. That really makes you wonder how much of the awe we feel for certain historical music is just down to centuries of really effective marketing by those gatekeepers.
That's a provocative way to put it, but yeah, that's kind of the point he's pushing towards. And you see that marketing most clearly in his second big critique, which is what he calls the Beethoven paradigm. This is the ideology that basically built the framework for how Western culture treats high art music.
Okay, the Beethoven paradigm. Break that down for us. What are the components?
Sure. It's essentially a powerful myth built on like four main pillars. First, the composer is this solitary, often suffering genius figure. Think Beethoven himself.
Got it. Moody guy in a garret.
Kinda, yeah. Second, the music itself is seen as an autonomous object, something timeless existing outside of everyday life. Third, the written score is the definitive, almost sacred text of that music.
And the fourth.
The listener's role is to be passive, silent, reverent. Just absorb the genius's message without interfering.
Ah, that explains the concert hall glare if you clap between movements. You're breaking the spell, interrupting the sermon.
You are. You're violating the expected code of behavior within that imaginary museum, as Cook calls it.
Yeah.
But if we accept Cook's idea that the work itself is just an ideology, what does that do to the status of the score? Is it still important?
Good question. Because we tend to treat scores, especially by the greats, with such reverence.
Cook really tries to demystify the score.
What?
He uses this brilliant analogy, one that everyone should probably keep in mind. He says the musical score is like a recipe for a cake.
A recipe? Okay.
It's just a set of instructions, right? For how to potentially create something.
So the actual music, the cake in this analogy, is the performance itself. That unique, unrepeatable event happening in real time.
Exactly. The performance is the meal, not the recipe.
But if the score is just a recipe, does that diminish the genius of someone like Bach, who wrote these incredibly complex, amazing recipes?
Not necessarily diminish the skill, no. But it shifts the focus of where the primary creativity lies. It means the performers, the orchestra, the conductor, maybe the jazz improviser working from a simple chart. They're not just delivery mechanisms anymore. They become active co-creators of the musical event, of the meaning. It puts the listener and the performer right back in the center of the action, maybe pushing the long-dead composer slightly off that pedestal.
Okay, that makes sense. Elevating the performer and the act of performing. And that leads us neatly into his thoughts on popular music, right? The whole authenticity trap.
Yeah, which is also fundamentally about ideology specifically. Ideology about art versus commerce, masquerading as objective value.
Give us the classic example he uses.
Think about the typical contrast drawn between, say, rock music, maybe exemplified by a band like the Rolling Stones, and mainstream commercial pop, like Madonna back in the 90s.
Right. Rock is often seen as authentic. It's supposed to be sincere, maybe a bit raw, anti-commercial, played live by the people who felt it and wrote it, from the heart.
Mm-hmm. Whereas pop is often dismissed, culturally, as inauthentic. It's manufactured, maybe overly polished, driven by image, artificial. The assumption is it's just about the money.
It's often not even written or played by the star on the record.
Exactly. Now, Cook's argument is that this whole binary authentic rock versus inauthentic pop is basically a cultural myth, a construct. The perceived authenticity of the Rolling Stones, with their carefully crafted image of rebellious, bluesy grit and anti-establishment cool, That's just as much a performance, a constructed identity, as Madonna's calculated polish and marketing savvy.
So authenticity isn't a real quality. It's just a set of cultural codes or signs that we've decided to value more highly.
Precisely. We tend to prioritize the codes associated with sincerity and anti-commercialism because our culture holds this, well, romantic ideology that true art must be pure and somehow separate from commerce.
But Cook is saying, look, it's all representation. All music, whether it's high art or low pop, is a kind of performance. A performance of a certain kind of identity designed to signal specific meanings to a particular audience or social group.
Okay, so if we pull back and synthesize these big critiques, the commercial construction of value, the myth of the genius composer, this authenticity trap,
yeah.
What are the main high-level takeaways, the things that should really change how you hear music from now on?
Well, the first one has to be that foundational idea we mentioned, music as participation, or musicking. We need to stop thinking of ourselves as just passive receivers. We need to recognize our active role in making the music happen, whether that's through dancing, listening intently, singing along, or even just having it on in the background while we do something else. Our engagement brings it to life.
Yeah, absolutely. And second, flowing from that, is recognizing the politics and power of music. Music is never neutral. It's never just entertainment. It's deeply embedded in social and political power structures. It's used constantly to define nations, to reinforce or challenge social norms, to construct gender roles, and crucially in our world, to sell us stuff.
So even just choosing what to listen to or how you listen becomes, well, a political act in a small way, an act of engaging with or resisting those structures.
Definitely. Third, and this feels maybe the most liberating takeaway, is the attack on the false hierarchy. Cook really gives you the intellectual tools to dismantle that old classical versus pop divide, or any rigid hierarchy, really. The goal isn't to argue that, say, a pop song is as good as a Beethoven symphony, but to question whether that kind of comparison even makes sense in the first place. We should analyze things on their own terms.
Taking a pop song or an ad jingle just as seriously in terms of cultural analysis as we take a concerto.
Exactly. Taking it seriously as a cultural text, understanding its function and meaning. And finally, a really key message is the strong link between music and identity. The music we gravitate towards, the musical subcultures we might join, the playlists we build, these aren't trivial choices. They are active ways we figure out who we are and signal our affiliations to others. Music helps construct our sense of self.
Cook really nails these ideas with some memorable phrasing. It's worth highlighting a few of those core concepts in his own kind of language.
Yeah, he's very quotable. Let's start with the absolute core thesis, which you could paraphrase as, we should stop thinking of music primarily as an object and start thinking of it as an action, a process. The proper term for music is not a noun, but a verb, to music.
That really sets the stage for everything else, doesn't it? To music.
It does. And then there's the demystification of the score, that great analogy. The musical score is not the music any more than a recipe is a meal. It is a set of instructions for creating a musical event, and the performance is the event itself.
Such a clear way to picture that shift from the page to the actual experience. Makes it stick.
Mm-hmm. And finally, maybe his ultimate statement on those hierarchies we discussed, something like, the question is not whether popular music is as good as classical music, but whether such comparisons make any sense at all.
It just cuts through that whole debate. Judge music for what it is and what it does in its own context.
Exactly.
Okay, this is all fascinating intellectually. But how does this actually change things for us day to day, living in this world saturated with music, playlists, algorithms? What are the practical applications?
Well, first and foremost, it encourages you to become a much more critical listener. So the next time you hear music playing maybe in a store, during a movie scene, or in an online ad, consciously pause for a second. Ask yourself, what values is this music trying to sell me alongside the product or mood? Is it aiming for excitement, security, nostalgia? What emotional work is it doing? You shift from just hearing to actively analyzing.
Turning passive consumption into a kind of active cultural analysis. I like that.
And second, thinking about that false hierarchy. Maybe use this perspective to question the tools we use to find music now. Like when Spotify or Apple Music serves up recommendations.
Their algorithms are acting as the new gatekeepers, right?
In a way, yes. They're implicitly reinforcing certain ideas about what's good or popular or important, often based on commercial data. Not necessarily artistic merit or cultural function in Cook's sense. Being aware of that is powerful.
And it gives you permission, doesn't it? Permission to break down your own prejudices.
Totally. You can apply the same intellectual curiosity, the same analytical tools to understand a global K-pop hit or a grime track as you might to a Bach cantata.
Yeah.
Kind of democratizes your own listening habits.
There's also an ethical dimension, maybe, especially with world music.
Yeah, definitely. When listening to music from cultures different from your own, Cook's framework encourages you to try and understand its original context, its social function, rather than just treating it as, you know, an exotic sound or a cool accessory. Engage with them more respectfully.
For me, the most valuable thing I'm taking away isn't necessarily a new set of facts about music history, but rather this new critical toolkit. It helps you see your own assumptions about art, value, and commerce more clearly.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like it really does democratize the whole conversation about music, taking it out of the hands of just the experts.
I agree. I think Cook ultimately shows us that music, or maybe we should say musicking, is just too important, too fundamental to the human experience to be left solely to academics or critics. This universal human art of making meaning with sound, it's everyone's birthright. And realizing that you, as a listener, as a participant, are an active co-creator in that process. Well, that's pretty exciting, I think.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.